Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yep, we have another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, and tonight, the big question about God. So I thought that this would be an interesting show, especially since last week, dealing with the question of how evolution and God and God's thought, or some people would call it spirit itself, spiritual thought, is interconnected as well as not necessarily antithetical, meaning that there's a paradox or a problem between the two. There may be a paradox, but certainly not a problem in some people's minds, anyway. And the way that it all fit together, I thought tonight's show would be going to the bigger picture of the whole situation. Actually, the title of a chapter in one of my books, a textbook, on this very subject. And to talk about God's creation versus a random universe. So that's what we're really dealing with. And, you know, the present theories in science, which we will be talking about tonight, considerable amounts of it, rest on the idea that there's no such thing as God or spiritual thought, and that our universe it was created by a random event, a random series of events, trillions and trillions of them actually would have to be, to produce the universe that we exist in and to produce us in total. And that, of course, is in contradiction to some of the things that I spoke about last week, dealing with how alone and without any spiritual background, any spiritual foundation, there's some serious conflicts with theories of evolution that try to explain that. Evolution is not just theory, though. Evolution has proven itself in science. It can be replicated. We can make all kinds of different things, from bacteria to you name it, including higher levels of mammals and possibly eventually the body of a human being. All that can be produced through what we understand about evolution, we being science and humans in general. But it doesn't exactly address the question that was begged last week, which is, could evolution have created life and the kind of life we know about within the time period and within getting through all of the glitches that we know existed or were almost certain existed during the development of planet Earth? I'm not talking about the biblical time period that some people sometimes use. That would be, in my opinion, an error to even consider. But I am talking about within the 4.65, or give or take, billion years since the very inception of the planet Earth's beginnings. And then after that, because of some events, life really didn't start till maybe 4.1 billion years ago, if at all, in that time period. Given all that length of time, you don't have enough time to produce the effects. And one of the scientists who came up with that conclusion was one of the two people who came up with the theory of DNA itself, which is interesting because you would think that person would probably be strongly on the evolutionary side, but it didn't turn out to be that way. There's about somewhere between a 5 and a 12 times problem, just in the evolutionary issue, for us to conclude that evolution could have produced the effects that we know about. And when that came out, that was at a time when announced to most of science, there was even other events that caused a retardation in the development of human life by extinction models, ice and cold and severe heat and of course, we know about now the asteroid issues and all the other volcanic and all the other things that interfered with life, so you wouldn't have this process smoothly moving over time. And therefore, there's some significant questions that become, we'll say, a problem for the evolutionary theory. Well, interestingly, just that one thing, there's a lot more than I presented last week, but I can't redo last week's show, so you can go listen to it. But just that one issue also, at a much larger scale, becomes a problem when you deal with the universe in general. And we'll be talking about that tonight. So tonight it's God's creation versus a random universe. And just notice they left out the word a random universe. But I think you've got it in tonight's show. So this is an important thing. And I hope to explain how God did create our universe and explain it in a way that is fairly easy to understand. I don't consider it the easiest thing to understand compared to a lot of other stuff, but I think it's a lot easier to understand than the science that I'm going to talk about more at the beginning of tonight's show that is trying to explain how the universe was created, because that science is extremely complicated, and you have a thing called Occam's razor. No, it's not the part that you shave your face with, but it's a concept of that applied in mathematics means that the simpler the theorem to explain something in comparison to more complex ideas, the more likely the truth of the equation or idea. And so from that standpoint, it is probably worthwhile to consider the simpler of these two tonight than the more complex one, which I'll try as best as I can to get across. So hopefully it'll be an interesting show tonight, because we're going to be dealing with things that I think are on a lot of people's minds. And interestingly, they're starting to have some shows on cable that sort of deals with this subject, although I think it's going to just go with the more scientific explanations, although supposedly they're going to bring in God, so we'll see how that works. So let's talk about the science of the issue. Now, the science of it has to do with a number of different parts. One of those parts is quantum mechanics and quantum fields, as well as quantum physics as it applies to particle physics. So the two together, particle physics and quantum physics, come into play. Sometimes some people try to use a part of physics called string theory, which some people claim not to be physics, but just the mathematics principles. But regardless, that's also part of what we have to include, because if we're going to be all-inclusive, I want to give it a fair airing tonight without confusing people too far into the situation. So I'm going to give you some of the basic ideas that scientists are trying to work off of how the universe is created. Okay? So let's kind of start it off this way. The universe was created in time, which may be different than the apparent distances because of a thing called inflation. We'll get to that in a minute. In time, somewhere, some scientists are now thinking 13.7, 13.8 billion years ago, maybe 14. But in that ballpark, billions of years ago, that's like three times the age of the Earth, or more. Okay, and the age of our solar system, about the same, about three times the age of our solar system. So this seems like a long time to most people. And the idea is that the universe was created by a series of random events caused by the interaction of how energy, when it is squished down to the extreme levels of a size, like 10 to the minus 32 meters in size or less, maybe all the way down to 10 to the minus 35 meters, That's a very, 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 very small number, smaller than anything we have today in the universe, extremely small. All the apparent energy that exists in the universe, one theory is, came from this very small point. And then it suddenly went from being at that small point to exploding, if you want to think of it in that terminology, and going through within far less than a second a whole bunch of amazing particle changes and energy changes. Now, without going through the detail of those changes, the problem immediately becomes, okay, where did the energy come from? You know, somebody's going to bring that up right off the bat. You know, okay, it's a chicken and the egg thing, right? Yeah. Where did the chicken come from that laid the egg, and where did the egg come from that created the chicken? And we're still right at the base problem. Right. Okay. Now, some scientists prefer to want to believe, because it's an energy model, that this energy came from something other than energy, but it's related to energy. And that something other than energy is a sort of infinite series of waves, you know, like a wave you see on an ocean, but infinite series of waves at an infinitely small level from another dimension of time and space altogether, and that eventually manifested as energy. But then we got to still another problem, because where did the waves come from? Yeah, it, no matter what they do, it's always the same chicken and egg problem. And I can tell you that. There just simply is no end to the issue. No matter how many different ways they try to explore it. Some scientists today now have theories, well, it really came from a prior universe that exploded and went to its full heights and then crashed back down. But where did that universe come from? You know, okay, so, you know, it's like the average five-year-old, which they don't seem to want to listen to, who keeps asking the question, well, where did that come from? Where did that one come from? I mean, you can keep going indefinitely with this whole thing. And so it is a real nightmare to have what is known as a energy-only event to depend upon in terms of creating anything, including especially the universe. So it's a real problem. And to say that it isn't a problem is to blind yourself to the most basic question that a five-year-old could probably ask them and cause a problem. Now, you could come up with all kinds of other issues, and they try to deal with it from this angle, which isn't that far from the truth, by the way, and my truth, anyway, the one I'm going to present to you today. And that is, well, the universe really came from a probability. Okay. A probability. What does that mean? Well, that there really would be some kind of small, extremely small object of infinite energy that suddenly would appear from nowhere. Okay. And then the probability was that infinite object that would come from no place would suddenly become something that had enough energy to then develop into all of the particles and all the physics of our universe, and eventually produce, of course, life. Well, let's leave the five-year-old question, which obviously still creates a problem for that theory, and go a little bit further, because if we don't, we're never going to get anywhere in trying to even discuss what it is that science tries to explain, which they haven't been able to do. So let's ignore the obvious and move on to the less than obvious, that if the universe did create these events, then there's another problem. And the other problem is the universe is too big and things are too spread apart too quickly for this to all have taken place in the time that has been discussed. So what has been presented instead is a thing called dark energy. Dark energy is to blame for the whole problem. Now, what is dark energy? Well, the answer is nobody knows. It's the invention of several hundreds of scientists, minds, mostly physicists, who have to come up with some idea for increased expansion of the universe. And it was this energy along with dark matter, which has been discovered. There is such a thing as dark matter. Without going into too much depth, dark matter is actually matter that has different qualities to it than normal matter. And because of those different qualities, we can't see it very easily, but we can test for it. And it appears that in the tests, it seems like dark matter, not dark energy, has some foundations for existence. But regardless, it's this dark matter that causes certain things to take place, including the beginning, the formulation of what we call galaxies and how gas moves in a homogeneous volume to become heterogeneous or to specialize in certain ways and to develop little islands that become eventually stars and galaxies and that sort of thing. But the problem is that there's still this big expansion issue. One of the theories is that everything in the universe went way faster than the speed of light for like a minute or two, maybe longer. And in some cases, some models, it's for like millions of years. Okay, and the universe has expanded like a crazy thing. Okay, but it went faster than the speed of light, and that's a bit of a problem. Because when energy goes faster than the speed of light, it kind of screws up the energy-matter model. And the more energy goes faster, the more matter you have that's converted from energy, and you don't end up with the results that they claim. But we'll forget about that, too, because if you start addressing what is known as classical physics with these people, they get very perturbed. And this is actually part of classical physics, because it's part of Einsteinian physics, and most people don't know that that still is a classical design, and not a quantum physical design in its basis. And so it doesn't work. There are some problems there. Okay, that's the first of a zillion problems. And then there's a dark energy problem that is supposedly pulling the universe into a point where everything is moving apart too fast. And it doesn't make much sense, but okay. So where did the dark energy come from? Well, the same place the regular energy came from, which nobody understands. And if you're getting confused by this and saying, well, why are you even bringing this stuff up? It's just complete nonsense. Yep, it is. But let's go into another part of the math that they're trying to explain how the universe was created. A thing called statistical randomness, that if you just have enough time, anything can happen. Well, that's not exactly true. Anything can happen that's allowed to happen, is what they say. Well, I don't know who's doing the allowing, but anyway, let's say something or someone out there is doing the allowing. They usually say, well, it's the physics of the science that's doing it, the laws of physics. But they already break laws right off the bat, so nothing makes much sense. Okay, so the laws of physics allow certain things to happen, and within those laws of physics, anything can happen. All right, that's cool. And in statistical analysis, then, the question is, what are the number of interactions that are necessary to create a universe specifically like the one we have? And believe it or not, they actually got that one down. I don't know. Someone had a lot of time on their hands and a lot of computer power, and they came up with a trillion to the number of a trillion times, if you can imagine that number, which is impossible for us to imagine. It's too big. And some people are up to a trillion, 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 I don't want to get in a triple, a cube trillion, times everything that exists in the universe, to determine the likelihood of our universe ever being as it is. Now, that's based upon the known laws of physics to develop what we observe about our universe, including our own existence. Okay, there's a problem right there. Just so you can follow what I'm saying, because yes, I've been generalizing, but there's some a specific problem right now, and it's very similar to the problem with evolution. That when you get to those kinds of extreme numbers, the time necessary to create the universe from random events, this is just plain old random, you know, okay, keep going and keep trying and we'll maybe get it right someday, is longer by a vast number than the number of years that we have calculated that the universe, under the longest of factors, which is right now about 44 billion years. I know I said originally it's 14, but that's what we observe. There may be 44, 50, 60 billion years, actually, Bob. But it's way bigger than that. We're talking trillions of years here for the universe to have gotten to where it is today based upon random events. That's a big problem. That's worse than me. That's worse than just dealing with evolution on a little planet like Earth. Now you're really out in there and to the point where you got to say, this is, like, ridiculous. This not only doesn't make any sense if the universe could be anything like it is, just based upon a random kind of universe, chaotic universe, but it is so silly as to even make no sense at all. And then if you try to shorten it, let's try to just pretend that it took exactly as long as we think it could have taken, and that it had to have taken, based upon our observations. Let's say there were 50 billion years. The problem would be we would be able, some of the universes that also would be under the same random event factor would start appearing to us. They would. Some would be beyond the scope of our ability to see them, but others actually would be right around us. And we should have, you know, sort of like, well, if this could happen that easily, that often, then there should be more. Now you got the opposite problem. We don't have enough universes because the only one we know about is this one. So you either got too many, too few, but none of the time does it ever work out that things are just the way we observe them to be. And then you have a problem which is called separation of island universe issues. And that if you try to make a universe within the random aspects, you end up with conflicting universes. From one to the other, they start interfering with each other. One universe is screwing up the development of another universe, eventually, just because they exist for no other reason. But, I mean, it's preponderant on more and more preposterous issues that don't make any sense. Now, I'm talking about using the science and the mathematics that are applied to try to create these random universes. I'm not talking about creating something new. I'm not saying, okay, let's invent the new math and try to investigate their schedules and how. No, this is using the same math they're using to try to prove that randomness is how the universe is created. It just doesn't work. And probabilities don't work on their own. Nothing seems to work. Now, some people are going to say, well, it's just because they haven't figured it out yet doesn't mean that you're wrong, that you're right. Well, okay, I'll go along with that. When somebody does figure it out, give me a call. Hasn't happened yet, and they're not even closer, they're further away. The recent developments of theories, and I'm not talking about like 20 years ago, I'm talking about 2 years ago, the most recent developments have become more and more absurd. Just on the face of them, because they get into silly reductio, it's called, ways of thinking that disprove themselves as you use the theories. Just doesn't make any sense because you're ignoring the obvious. And what is the obvious? The obvious is that you get to a universe just like the one we're in by there being a being. You can call it God, the creator, whatever you want to call it, that is interfering with randomness and is controlling the development of creation so that what we consider to be a miraculous event is the event of a being, just like we are, in some respects, that is a creator. Like life and our life are creators. The obvious thing is that just like we already are as a model, and we have been told in many respects that God is a super example of us, or we're a smaller, minuscule example, correspondence, not example exactly, of God, that is the best explanation you can come up with. And I'm going to start going into that explanation right now, because this stuff, before I was talking about, can just make you go crazy. It is so unbelievably unintelligent, even though it has a woeful amount of huge amount of thought coming from people and machines. Well, machines don't exactly think, but they do a lot of calculations and help people who are thinking. And it doesn't carry the day. So we have to move to something else, because if we stay in that other model, we don't get anywhere. There just is no solution to the most basic question a five-year-old could ask and cannot get a decent answer to: chicken and the egg. All right. So let's start with the model that I presented in a textbook I wrote called Life's Hidden Meaning, that these days has become a real strong model for some people that are very, very scientifically minded, but also believe there is a creator, and at least are open to that idea. They don't necessarily believe it per se, but they're open to the idea, so they want to use that to try to see if there's an answer to this, to these ridiculous questions. Well, to begin with, I start with the same exact proposition that some recent models have suggested, and that is that there are an infinite number of possibilities, and within those infinite number of possibilities, there are only some that actually work out to be creating universes. So only some of the possibilities fit into what we call laws, but what really, in my opinion, have to do with a creator. A field that's infinitely large of possibilities. Some of these fields, because I believe there are more than one, that would exist possibly at an infinite level, would have the opportunity to randomly help to develop in an infinite period of time some being, a being, that has thought, that has the ability through its own thinking to recognize that it has a self and that it is different from the remainder of the field that it exists within. In other words, we would say it's conscious. It has developed a state of consciousness, and it developed it strictly in a sense by randomness, but it was the consciousness that is the first creation and not energy and all the intricate problems that you run into when you start off. So the first thing that is created is the thought of a being that can somehow direct a field it's within. It could have some effect on the field. And if that effect is to limit the field in some way so that it is separate from the field, then you can call it a director of that field. That's basically my supposition in how a being such as God can begin its existence. Now, you might say, well, how is that different than creating a universe from nothing? Well, because it isn't from nothing. This is from everything. It's actually harder to understand how everything creates our universe because of the time model problem than it is a very limited something does. But only if you don't have a director that's making a differentiation between what it is and what it is not. It has a mind. That's the definition of a mind. And it can limit a field, which means it's more than just any old mind, it actually is a limiting mind of the field that it exists in, and therefore it's the kind of mind that we call having the potential to be a creator, if it chooses to. Wow. Oh, you might say, well, where does a thought come from? Okay, I'll explain. Thought, in its most basic form, is two or more choices. Choices are just limitations from one point to another point in its own existence. So anything that has some limitation, that has two or more of something, is a choice provided it can exercise an effect on the next set of choices that are around it, which is part of the field that it exists in. And once it could do that, that's a real choice. And you can say, well, a choice is a thing? Yeah, a choice is kind of a thing. It comes before what we think of with things in terms of energies, because it has to do with the infinite number of possibilities. Choices limit the possibilities and become the director when they are large enough to limit an infinite number of possible choices. Wow. The directors are big beings in some respects. There's this infinite field, and yet the choice is limited down. And each director could be somewhat different from any other director then, by its own level of choices. Interesting idea. And once the choices are affecting other choices, there's a direction to the choices then. And the direction of the choices, joined with the choices themselves, becomes what we call consciousness, or the development of some kind of super self in this being. It says, I am, here I am, I know I exist. Okay, so that's how something comes from nothing. It doesn't really come from nothing, it comes from the infinity of all possibilities. But it, from that infinity, it's able to make some limitations on it and produce itself. Itself. Its own self does its creation, its own self limits the field it's in, its own self is an amazing being, a director of a field of infinite choices. Now, that director has an option, if it wants to take that option. And that option is to say, you know, this is kind of interesting, I'm hanging it out in my own field here of infinite possibilities when I know who I am, but you know what, this is boring. I want there to be more than what my field is here, but my field is an infinite number of choices, so how in the heck there is going to be more than this? And it comes up with an idea. It says, wait a second. I'm going to create a new field that's way limited from this field. It's my field. I'm going to call it my field. And I'm going to substitute part, and I'm going to move into that field and become part of it myself. And in that field, I'm going to be much more limited than this field, but at the same time, I'm going to be a creator of something new. It's a new field of choices, a new field of possibilities, in which the thing that I like about that field is I'm going to create something in it that, other than myself, is going to make zillions and zillions and zillions and zillions of choices all together. And that other thing is going to be life. I'm going to come up with life. Life was a possibility in the infinite field of possibilities, but it couldn't create itself without there being a creator of the whole field, limiting that field so that life had a chance. Life has no chance otherwise. I'll explain that towards the middle and end of the show. But just for right now, let's accept what I'm saying. Life has no chance without the creator being around. Because one way to look at it is, you get back to the random universe then, and in a random universe, you end up being something called sterility. Life can't exist in that universe. Interesting problem. And that's what they're coming up with, honestly. Today, most of the universe models end up being an anachronistic, terrible universe that has nothing but bad things for life. And in the rare possibility that some life can develop, it isn't the life we have. So we got a real problem. But not in the universe that God creates. And the creator, in the universe that it creates, inside, like our universe, which one of the universes it chose to create, or maybe the only one, this universe, in this universe, that's where I call God. That creator is now God within the universe as he created it, as we understand it, and the universe that is, has a growth of itself through life. And this is the way God decides to grow itself. And you say, well, why do, if God is the great creator, why does it have to go through this enormously complex step of creating life that eventually can create more of itself, but it has to do so through its own field of choices different from God's choices? Why do that? Well, that's the secret. That's the big secret. Because when you choose that to be the model, the results are phenomenal, because you get something called freedom, and you get something called new and change, and all through a sacrifice of yourself in the process, God's sacrifice of itself to some extent, and it gets to experience the growth of its life without being the progenitor beyond just the life itself of the life's own choices and thought. So the choices with direction, which we call thought, are all created by life and not by God. Now that's a pretty cool idea. I really like that idea. Okay, and you can say, well, then where do we go from here if that idea even is true? And naturally we're going to get into it in the rest of the show. But for right now, I got to let your brains kind of cool down, because I just went through a heck of a lot of stuff. And if you want to read more about this or understand more, I have other shows on this. Plus, there is that second chapter, chapter 2, in Life's Hidden Meaning. You might say, well, I could read a whole book. That thing was 700 and whatever pages long. No. Actually, that chapter is only about 16 pages. It's going to be the hardest stuff you ever read. Honestly, it's really hard to understand. But because the concepts are so big. But it is really, really amazing, because it addresses the issues in a way that are remarkably clear if you can follow it. In my opinion, of course, I wrote it, so I think it's clear as day. I just think it's as clear as mud, but that's up to you to decide, but it is worth a read if you would like to consider that. How's that for a little book sale on the side? Okay, and speaking of book sale on the side, we're going to go ahead and move into a couple of brief commercials. We should be back in about 2.5 minutes or so from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about God's creation versus a random universe. And if you're wondering how come the word A is missing, I don't know. It got random. It got lost somewhere. When I put up the show tonight, they left out the word A, but that's okay. All right. At any rate, okay, here we go. We are talking about the interesting elements of where our universe actually came from, where God came from, and which came first, the chicken or the egg, as far as science is concerned. And I think we've covered that part pretty good. So actually, the universe is really constructed of a bunch of choices of a being that is self-created based upon the fact that it has the ability to change the direction and the quantity of its own choices within a field of infinite possibilities. Now you could say, well, how come it's an infinite field? Why not just a limited field? Well, then it wouldn't be a God of a universe. Eventually. It wouldn't be a creator of the universe. It would be something less less. Within our own universe, there's all kinds of beings that we call life forms that, within limited fields of possibilities, create themselves. All kinds. Everything that we can think of in life is actually self-created at some level. Usually it's at the level of what is called a soul, different from the individual life form. Human beings are strange because their souls are involved in creating them, but they themselves are also self-created. So human beings are the first kind of life form above the lower kingdoms that can do that. The other kingdoms cannot. Because they don't have enough thought within the field that they exist in. It's too limited to create themselves, so a soul of sorts creates them along with many of their companion life forms. We only have one soul, and our soul helps to create us, and then the result is we become self-created in our life, which is cool, because we are a great example of the bigger part of what we're talking about, which is God. Except we do it within a limited field of possibilities, and God could do it within a huge, enormous, unlimited field. Okay. So the universe started off being random. At least the pre-universe started off being random, and then a being made it specific and chosen, and then from there created our universe by limiting itself tremendously. We call it its mind became extremely limited to a few parts that keep it simple, thinking of its existence or creating life. And then it created life with these three parts of its own being to produce everything we know about that's alive in the universe. It's an amazing thing. It goes further than that, and we'll talk about some of the more detailed issues. Like there are other universes, and there are other gods. And there are other beings that exist in those universes. Some of them have some element of effect on our universe, because the God of our universe knows about those other beings in other universes. That's pretty cool. And they're all interacting together. It's an amazing thing. But for where we stand right now, we've come a long way down the road from a random universe. And I want to go back and address some of the quandaries now of the random universe. And why is it that human beings constantly grope for something so unbelievably impossible as a random universe to replace a universe created by God? Well, here's the main factor. Humans are challenged in some cases. Some humans are challenged by there existing a God that can create such a wondrous thing as the universe. It makes them feel very small sometimes. And it makes them feel as though they're not in control of what's going on, which is a weird kind of thing because it's exactly the opposite of the truth. But they want to believe, and this is true of a lot of scientists, but it isn't only scientists. It's obviously people who are atheists and people who are agnostic or who believe in a kind of religion that's way different than one that sees God as the creator. And they want to believe the opposite because it makes them, it gives them a false sense of control, but also it gives them a sense of futility and a fearful non-existence at what they consider to be death. So there's a lot of bad things about not believing that God created the universe. But even worse, it's a matter of understanding. Their minds are confused to the point where they can't see the most basic questions that a five-year-old can ask and refuse to pay attention to the obvious. And the obvious is all around us because God is in life and life is all around us. So it's a real problem based mostly on things called egotism and arrogance, but also to some extent based upon humans' need to have some kind of grasp, some kind of control about their universe. And to some people, that control comes best from a randomly created universe and one that has a being, because the being then to them would be controlling them and they don't want to be controlled. But that's the opposite of the being that I'm suggesting created our universe. He created life so life could be free to think and choose for itself and be self-created. That's the God I'm talking about. And these folks that have the antithesis opinions and the random universe ideas usually do so because of an underlying desire. Some people will call it a glamour. It means like a desire that's fixed inside of them, they can't get rid of it. Their whole existence kind of revolves around this desire to believe that they don't want to be controlled by any kind of super being, so there can't be a super being because they're going to have control of their own lives no matter what. But that's exactly what God made them do, to believe that. So the odd thing is, God's choice for life to be so free is why humans have such a doubt, some humans, that God created the universe. Tell me that isn't a kick. That is really amazing. So we're exactly the way God made us. And at this stage of our development, this is where we're at for some of us, not all of us. As a matter of fact, it's less than 10% of all the population of the people on the planet, for sure, and it may be less than 5%. So the people that believe this are very much in a minority. But it's still a strongly voiced minority because they are usually people with some degree of authority. Other people listen to them because they know a lot about the minuscule elements of science as they are presently understood. And we give them great accolades and say they're terrific people because they have gone to school so long and have written and stayed and figured out some of the minor parts of how the universe works. And we think this gives them this authority to make these broad statements about God. Of course, it doesn't, but, well, it gives them the authority to do so, but it doesn't give them the truth. It only gives them more illusion. Wow. Isn't that, I mean, this whole thing is like upside down, to say the least. But it kind of makes sense that at where we're at on Earth, we being humans, we are there because God made it so. Not to confuse us and not to allow evil to be developed or egotism or selfishness. Not so we all will be in illusion all the time, but so we can be free. It's one of the things that comes along with the need for life to be free to create itself. It also has to be free to fool itself and to move in a direction away from God some of the time, to even become evil and want to destroy life, all for the sake of it feeling that it is more in control than it really is of its existence. And at the same time, in a weird way, producing a sense of being out of control because of it and losing sight that there is a creator. That's just a super being in comparison to themselves. And this super being really wants for them to be free and to be self-created. Absolutely amazing. Talk about a series of paradoxes and a lot of, we'll say, illusion within humans. Now, if some of that made sense to you, what I just said, then you're a long way down the road from a random universe, because you're beginning to see that there's a design to the process. Yeah, I'll call it intelligent design if you want. Some people who are into the religious kick real strong, oh, he's on our side. I'm on God's side. And God's side is that, yeah, this universe we're in is darn intelligent. As a matter of fact, it's too intelligent for any random universe to have created within the time period that even at the widest amounts we assume. So it just is an amazing thing that there's still hundreds of millions of people, at least 100 million or more, who believe such things as a random universe created everything, and we're just an accident, and this is it. Some of those people believe that there's zillions of universes just like us because they're just popping up like popcorn all over the place. That's not even statistically likely, much less in any other way. But they prefer to think that it is. Okay, so here we go. Let's talk about where God goes from being a creator of a universe, which we'll say for right now is our working hypothesis, all right? And how did we come up with where we are at the present day and time? I mean, how do you go from that one, like, gee, I think I'll create a universe today, to the universe we're in? How does that all occur? And how do you explain it using some elements of science? Because after all, you know I'm not throwing out science here. I think science is part of God. It's just when it's misunderstood, it sure becomes laughable. When you can't answer a five-year-old's question, you know you're in trouble. All right. So, in the beginning, yeah, God created the universe by separating its own mind. He said, you know, this thing of my mind is too powerful for all the stuff I want to create themselves of and all the stuff, we'll call it life, that I want to create so that it is self-created, and it keeps going. And the only way I can make that happen is to so limit myself that it's an incredible level of sacrifice. It's a birthing process through sacrifice. Sound familiar? Have you noticed that that same process, when life procreates, is more than evident in almost every kind of life form we can imagine? Everyone we examine goes through a tremendous amount of limitation, self-limitation, and sacrifice to just procreate life. And procreation is different than creation. Procreation is a replication process. that has been built into life over eons, whereas creation is to create new life, a new form of life, a new kind of life. And God did that first. Wow. As a matter of fact, oddly, God doesn't do the procreation. God does the initial creation and then allows life to do further creations and procreations, both. Wow. Now, souls are the creative element of all life except for human life. Human life can be creative and procreative, and outside of just their soul. Whereas everything below human life, that is not a soul, the soul part of it, is only procreative and not self-creative. All right? Following me? I hope so. And that means, amazingly so, that we humans are much closer to God because we are self-created, besides being procreative in our life, than all other forms of life below us. Isn't that neat? We also are the first form of life that contemplates the existence of its own creator and is constantly perplexed by the issue and even has all that I said a few minutes ago of the quandaries of denying its creator because of its threats and the illusions that it has about such a subject. Incredible. It's us that becomes the enigma in life. Now, what about those that are beyond us? Well, those beyond us have already figured out everything I've told you and more in this show tonight, and so they don't have any problems about there being a creator. They wonder sometimes how we have such vast problems about this. So they have none, because they and God are so much closer together. They've joined the mind of God within themselves so much better in a balanced and closer way that they are much closer to their Creator and can recognize it without problem. We in our illusions can barely recognize anything about our Creator until we truly put our self online and are willing to make numerous issues and sacrifices of our own minds so we can see the mind of God within our mind and outside. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. I love it. I find that this is the foundation of how a person moves from a lost being to a true spiritual being. And spirit, remember, by my definition, is God's thought. And God's thought is composed of two parts. Its choices and the direction to those choices, which is its consciousness, which limits the field of all other choices that it exists in, making it a creator. Wow. That's the bottom line here. I want you to think about all that. Well, I tell you a little bit about a couple of experiences this week. Doing a little bit of advertising. This is free advertising. I'm not getting anything necessarily from any of this stuff other than the goodness of my own heart. And I was getting some clothes recently, and I went to a place called Joseph A. Bank. It's a men's clothing store. It's not a bad clothing store. It's kind of like... they have better clothes than some other stores do. Some people think that, and I thought that when I saw it. The ones that fit me would be really good. And in the process of shopping in this particular store, I have found that the people there are unusually courteous and helpful. And if they're not too busy, because sometimes they get really busy on some days, but they really try. And one store that impresses me is the Gilbert store, among other stores that I've been in, simply because I don't think they're as busy, actually. But they tend to do what they can to pay attention to the needs of the customers that come in. And that's cool. I like that. I've been in their busiest stores, and there you get plenty of attention, but not as much as you might if you run to the Gilbert one. So I can recommend the Gilbert store if you're in the Phoenix metropolitan area. Now, they have hundreds of stores all over the country, and I can't really say what those other stores are like, but I'm saying that their clothes are pretty good and pretty nice. And so if you're in the space of buying some clothes, and this is a men's store now, remember that, and you're buying them for a man in your life or your man and you're going out getting them, then I would try them out. I've seen their ads on TV, by the way, for years. I kind of ignored a lot of them because I thought they were possibly some higher place. It just was, you know, I'm going to rip you off or something. And you can, if you just go in there randomly, you might come to that conclusion. But their sales are really good. And they have a lot of them. And their sales, some of their sales put their prices down to lower than most of the places you can buy clothes. And yet their clothes, I think, are better. So I just thought you might want to know about that. And you may want to, the manager of the store, Gilbert, her name is Roya. And there's a one gal that works that I, she's taking a sabbatical from being a school teacher. I guess it's a good way to, you know, get away from it all and be helping people buy clothes. But anyway, her name, I think her name is Chris. And you said, we got all these folks over there that are really helpful, and they're trying to really please their customers. The other thing that's nice is they're actually reading some of my stuff, which is good. You know, when I go places, I always talk about the same thing I talk to you guys about over the air. Yeah, I'm doing it everywhere. You can't shut me up. I'm always talking about stuff. And so, I got them interested in some of the things that I've written, et cetera. And they're reading, which is good. Like the manager over at the Grimaldi's, which, interestingly, is right across the street. So if you want to get a pizza, we can go over there. It's right across the little street that they're on in this big shopping center called Santan Village. And you can go over to Grimaldi's and get a pizza from one of the 8 pizza restaurants and talk to Rebecca, who is the manager there, if she's in, or John, who is one of the manager and kind of owners of the place. So these people have been helpful, but they're also interested in some of the same subjects that some of you are. And that's the reason I'm mentioning this, because you get to meet people who have similar thoughts, or at least, you know, they may have read, so they may not even think that it makes any sense to them. And then you can talk to them as well about it and see if it makes sense to you or them. I thought that would be interesting to bring up. I also wanted to talk about Dr. Jarrett tonight. I didn't have a chance to call him. I'm going to give him a call. Now, I've been trying these orthotics. They're called Theta orthotics. And they actually have been helping my feet. You know, I'm getting on to being older than a lot of folks. And feet get tired and they get flatter as you go through your lifetime. They flatten out mostly because we don't probably wear the right shoes in the beginning. But regardless, just time itself and gravity has some effect on that. And these particular orthotics, which I'm going to tell you a lot more about next week, have been helpful, truly helpful, to me. And I'm going to tell you a lot more about it after I get a chance to talk to Dr. Jarrett. I wanted to do that this week, but I got so busy with so many things that, believe it or not, I contacted him. I said, let's set up a time. And then I couldn't do it myself, which is weird, because I was the one contacting him about it. And so hopefully next week I'll have a lot more to say about the subject. Maybe we'll even have him on this show to talk a little bit about it. I know it's way off the subject, but I found it so helpful to me that it's worth some of you hearing about it. Because believe it or not, something just very structural can change a lot about feet and walking and other issues that can be destructive to how we experience our world around us. So I like to walk, and walking is a good exercise, but if you don't have the right shoes, you don't have orthotics, if you need them, then the problem can be aggravated. So something to consider. So we'll talk more about that. In the meantime, if you want to go to Dr. Jarrett's site, You can look up his name, and you can go to his site. Read about this Theta Orthotics, and we'll talk a lot more about it next week when I'm better informed and can answer some questions that people might have. So before you even email me about this, give me a shot at talking to Dr. Jarrett more so I understand the theories behind why his particular orthotics seem to be making a difference for other things I've tried. Him and really done a heck of a lot. So, all right, let me move on, besides those thoughts of the day, to God's creation versus a random universe and get into some of the elements of this so that we can kind of come to some interesting conclusions by the end of the show. All right. So, as I was saying, it's human beings that kind of foul up this whole system. We are the beings, a part of life, that have just enough of God in us that we self-recognize and that we can look for our Creator ourselves in, that other creatures below us cannot, to deny its existence. Tell me that isn't a kick. So in other words, animals don't go running around saying, well, there is no God, there is no God, there is no God. It's all a random universe because they don't even think about it. They're not wondering whether the universe is random or created because they don't have a sense of God. They don't have consciousness in the crown and heart chakras. And without consciousness in those centers, if they have those centers at all in their bodies, they can't sense God. And if you don't have a sense of something, it's pretty much vacant from them. Now, this is true of animals that are not close with people. Yes, if you get very close to an advanced ape, you teach it sign language, it might actually even come up with, why am I here? As a question. It might. But it's not, it's other, apes of its kind, but not like it, that are thinking that way. It's that particular one that is close to human being. You have to, it has to get a little bit of the sense of God from us before an animal is going to even start having any thoughts like that. Then it's becoming self-aware. Animals that are self-aware may actually have some sense of God. Now, is it true that some animals have some self-awareness and might have a sense of God? Yes, but that comes from very complicated issues about involvement with human beings from millions of years ago. But still, they don't have anywhere near the kind of sense of God that a human being does. They might have some very rudimentary issues. So, but and those are like the exception to the rule. And I don't want you all to think, well, just because there's an exception to the rule, it disproves everything else. No, it doesn't, as a matter of fact. What it does is it means that you just need to understand more about the whole subject, which tonight I'm not going to get deep into on that side of it. Okay, so we are at the part of life that really begins to question all this stuff, that sometimes rejects there being a God, and for whatever reason, we think that this is really the answer to our questions. Now, I got to tell you, if you think that that makes sense, I'm probably not going to convince you otherwise that there's a random development of the universe and there's no God, it's just all a bunch of nonsense, etc. If you believe that, you're probably not going to listen much to this show. And if you do, you probably don't like what I'm saying because it doesn't fit your reality. However, I suggest you still read this book I told you about, Lights and Meaning, or some other books as well, but Lights and Meaning deals with it very directly, to see if it makes sense to you after you read it more. Because one thing I can't do is really raise people's consciousness that much on a radio show. And that's what we're really talking about. People who totally dismiss God as existing usually have some disconnects in their consciousness that needs to be reconnected. And oftentimes it comes from certain life experiences, but sometimes it just comes from the way that they have chosen to create their own minds. So, that being the case, I'm going to move ahead from those folks and talk about what all this means for the rest of us. The rest of us who have come to the conclusion there is a creator. Some of us try to understand that creator by going to people who claim to understand it better. And they usually are religious leaders, spiritual leaders. Sometimes they come to me or people like me Sometimes they come to people who are, we'll say, writers of a different sort. Sometimes they go to people who are more astral, meaning that they just feel it and talk about their feelings about God, and even talk about various lower psychic events or feelings in their life, and maybe even read other people or do other things for people that are very lower psychic in nature. Lower psychic just means that it's not soul-natured in its existence, but it still has to do with some part of the usually astral experiences that they're having. That being the case, it's most fascinating to look at the breadth of how much we spend of our existence with this subject. I mean, it's not some small part of our life. It's, for some people, a major, major part of their life. Whether they believe it or not believe it or whatever, this is a big deal. I guess it may be the reason I've been on the air for 8 years. It's because people don't get tired of it so much. And because people still want to hear about it. But it's also because there are no pat solutions. Even the ones I write aren't going to answer every question a person has, although certainly more than a lot of other sources you might find a lot of questions answered. But every question, some of them are questions that deal with your own ability to create answers to, beyond what anyone other than yourself can answer. Let me give you an example. Let's say you say, all of you, but each of you individually say, well, I believe there's a God, provided that I get something when I believe that. And I won't believe it until I'm going to get something in return for the belief. Now, that's an interesting idea, because for all of the folks who believe that way, they've put themselves in a strange box. Because people like me are not going to be able to really be of much help to them. They're really saying, if I get something out of it, what's in it for me? Then I'll go along with this God being there, but you got to prove it to me, my God doing something for me. Yeah. I want to see something tangible come out of this thing. Well, that's a very, very weird place to put yourself into, because it prevents God from entering your life. It becomes a contradiction to what God is. Because God is into you discovering for yourself through your own creations that God exists. And you say, well, if God exists, let it prove it to me through its creation of something that I would like. And then you got a problem. Because God doesn't prove things that way to human beings. Instead, God says, well, I'll just let you go through a few lifetimes like that and let you figure it out for yourself eventually, because otherwise I will be taking from you your right to be self-created, your right to assert your own beliefs, right or wrong, to others, your right to be selfish, and even be evil if you choose to, your right to dispose of other people's thoughts and beliefs in favor of your own, and your right to not get something from God that you haven't proven yourself worthy to have. Those are all your rights. And God observes those rights that it gives to life, and especially to human life. So if you're hoping, expecting, demanding any of those things that I just mentioned, you'll be doing it for a long time. Because the contradiction is that as long as that's your position, you're making your battle with the subject much more difficult for yourself. It's a very odd thing. I'm not suggesting that you must surrender, if some religions use that word, yourself to some being with no understanding, no anything, just because that's what that being wants. I'm suggesting that you open your mind and your heart and use your senses of God to distinguish God from randomness and God from your own selfishness, and realize that the God of our universe is far from selfish. It's a being of incredible love that wants only the best for us, but it can't give that to us. We have to create it for ourselves. And this is the problem that humans particularly have. I, too many times, have heard from people that have told me that, well, I really like what you teach. It's thought-provoking. But I can't buy into it. Because if there was a God, why doesn't it just make itself known to everybody? And we'd all be having a lot easier time in this world. And there won't be some of the terrible things going on in its name and in the name of other things that are so destructive and harmful. Why would a God allow this to all go on this way? Well, of course, I've answered that question several times tonight. But for these folks, this is their position. And my answers to them, they don't get through usually because they don't get the whole big picture. They don't realize that the greatest gift God has given us is the ability to create ourselves and the ability to be separate from its thoughts and open and suggestive to others and co-creative if we choose and destructive if we choose not to. But we don't just destroy life, we destroy our own life at the same time. So this is no small outcome if you go down the wrong path. But God allows us to do that without there being like big road signs that say, okay, I told you not to do that, so I'm going to do something bad to you. No, God doesn't do bad things to us. We do bad things to ourselves. We're self-created. It's sometimes through ignorance. But who's that God has to make us in some way not ignorant and super knowledgeable or something? Even more so, super conscious. We can only become conscious by how we love, not how God loves. Consciousness doesn't come from God's love to us. Grace comes from God's love to us. Sometimes miracles come from God's love to us. The life we have comes from God's love to us. But the creation of everything within our life comes from ourselves. And that's where the bottom line is. And that's the difference in the perspectives of the folks that contact me or the ones I hear about or listen to that are proclaiming the other side of the fence. It's a fascinating idea. And it's one that really the people who were the founders of the United States, by and large, some were highly religious, some were non-religious, but almost all of them believed in what I'm telling you. That's why the United States is so special, because it has a piece of God in its own creation by the minds of those who created it. It's a fascinating idea. I know it's an aside from the general subject and very specific, but it's important because in this day and age, we're risking our own country due to certain choices we've made politically. And the results could be so harmful, so toxic to the world, it could end this planet. Because we are the instrument to find God, even among people who are atheistic, as long as they followed some of the principles that the United States has founded on. Some of those folks, though, are now moving away from principles of our founders and into socialism, communism, and a non-free market system. All of these things are unfortunate because they are caused by the same basic element of problem that humans have. And then they substitute for their lack of belief in God a belief in government. Government becomes the God of their life. Some people have that illusion. Not because they want, by some innate issue, government to be God, but because they have such a loss in their life, such a hole, such a hollowness, that they seek some substitution, something that is more concrete, something that does give to you when you ask for it, or even when you don't, something that does interfere directly in people's lives all the time, and in their choices, and in their thinking even, something that we can call overgrown socialistic, communistic types of governments. That's the kind of thing that happens to human beings when they get illusioned. They move down that path. It's happened over and over again in more recent histories. In prior histories, instead of it being necessarily that form of government, it was more in the form of tyrannical dictatorships, which still exist today, by the way, of course. And it's just a substitution for the God thing. The reason we prefer to have kings in some countries is because there's not enough of God in the minds and in the hearts of the people. Tell me that isn't a kind of jump to a more practical sign of this problem, a more, we'll say, complicated and difficult side to deal with, because it is widespread, it's somewhat universal, and then it's all over the world, and sometimes it's made whole countries into really hellish places because of it. And it comes from this need inside of us to get to the Creator one way or another, even if we go way off the path to get there, into a life of, or lives of illusion and being lost from our Creator. And substituting for that Creator the most obscene results from governments which are tyrannical to governments that are wasteful, destructive, arbitrary, and certainly ungodly. So we have a lot of issues. Certainly we have a lot of issues when it comes to understanding how God created the universe. Now, let's talk more specifically about our planet, Earth. Because our planet is going through its, I'll call it the adolescence period, in which a lot of the doubts about God become more scientifically founded and more based upon sophistic, that means like I know everything, viewpoints, rather than just on belief structure and feeling. And we've entered that period hundreds of years ago. Now we're really right in the thick of it. And the test of this adolescent period is whether we can survive. I know that sounds extreme, but unfortunately it is the test for a planet like Earth. Earth is also testing whether we can recognize and dispose of really treacherous forms of mental evil, propaganda, other things, that deals with this very subject and the substitution of God for the state. It's really a major part of the whole planetary question right now, and whether we're going to make it through it, because if we don't make it through it, we are going to be in one pickle. I mean, the pickle is that Earth ends up being physically destroyed. The souls from Earth are scattered. They don't all go off to another planet together. And the experiment fails to deal with effectively the evil that human beings create and how to stop it from being destructive to life and eventually a whole planet. So we will have lost that experiment in a sense. It's also a test, but it's an experiment, and we'll not have succeeded in it to find an answer for the rest of the universe, because that's what we're working for. We are here. It's a big project we're on, really. And most planets are not involved in this project because this is a dangerous project. This is what that is plagued by potential failure. Because it's about this very issue, and we are in it at the moment. I don't know if the moment's ever going to be as severe as it is in the next year or two. I mean, this is really it. And those who live in the United States are in the thick of the most of it. I know that evil is worse in many other countries, but the good that was built into the United States, which could save this world, is at risk. And if we don't make it, we're the leading country. If we don't make it, the chances of the rest of the world making it are almost zero. It's so big. And I don't know, it sounds like hyperbole. It sounds like, oh, that guy's just making that up because he thinks he lives in the United States and born. No. This is something you can figure out for yourselves by looking at our history, by seeing that this has been going on for hundreds of years, and it isn't just a question of some political ideation or someone's idea of a declaration they put on paper. It's about God. It's why, in the Declaration of Independence, all of who we are endowed from our Creator, and why that flowed into the Constitution. And from that comes all other elements. It's about self-creation. And it's why we've had a bemuddled but still capitalistic system. Granted, it hasn't worked properly because it has been contaminated mostly by corruption. But still, corruption is worse under other systems than capitalism. So you can't say, well, it's all capitalism's fault. No, corruption is part of human nature, not an economic system. But all these things have come to us at this time because we are faced with this question of tonight's show. Did God create the universe, or was it a random event? And are we here because of a plan, or are we here because of randomness? And a lack of plan. And I'm telling you, there's a major, major plan going on right now. That plan is to see if Earth, being in the thick of things, and with humans in their adolescent development, at least mentally speaking, can resolve this problem without destroying themselves and the planet and losing this laboratory to defeat evil about this particular incipient and nasty kind of evil. It's mental in nature. So it's about us. And it's about our planet. We came here, our souls came here, because we wanted to participate in this grand experiment. Not because we wanted to suffer, but because we wanted to be very creative in our lives and be able to provide an answer, a solution to a major problem in the universe. So our souls are the kind of souls that are seeking answers to this question more thoroughly and more proactively than the souls in some other worlds. This puts us in a kind of unique position of success or failure, because if we're to succeed, we have to, as human beings, which are examples in the physical world of a soul who exists in the mental world, as human beings, we have to find God well enough so this question is not in doubt within us. And it can't come from just religion, and I'm going to explain why now. The religions of the world presently do not sufficiently answer the question of how God created the universe, or how God, and why, most importantly, God created man, and why God created Earth, and on and on. Those questions are usually and unanswered. They're called ontological. And it has to do with cosmology in physics, but it's ontological because it has to do with understanding the creation of God and God creating the universe and us. And it isn't answered by religions as they are today, because the religions have political agendas and they're composed of a broad range of people's thoughts, some of which, even though they may be highly religious, do not address the question of God's being a creator and the randomness of the issue, the universe issues. And they aren't willing to fight with science about this when science demands that we give that concept up completely. That's a kind of strange idea, because everybody thinks, well, why hasn't religion solved this problem for us? And the answer is religion can't solve the problem, because religion cannot answer the question in the first place. And because it can't answer the question, there may be no answer, because people are depending upon religion to do so, and it's just not coming up with those answers. This is a major, major issue. And some people are recognizing the issue and modifying religion for themselves. They may still go to a church, etc., for various other reasons than to answer this question. But in their hearts and minds, they look beyond their religion for the answers. Maybe listening to the show is helping, or reading something I've written. Or maybe they'll contact me and talk. But or get together in a group of people to discuss this issue. All those are interesting ways to try to deal with this. But it is really, really important to address it in your own life, and not seek it just from religion, which doesn't have the answer. I mean, you can certainly check this out, because you can go to whoever the religious leader is of your faith and say, give me the answer, please. And when they say, oh, God is mysterious and there is no answer that you could understand, and I couldn't explain it to you even so, and whatever. You see, all of that is fancy ways of not being able to address the issue. And it's a way of avoiding. Now you could say, well, does that make them bad people because they're avoiding? No. It just makes them people, really. They're only expressing the same problems that you have. That's all it is. You might as well be talking to yourself. You're going to ask yourself a question that they have no more answers for than you do. Okay, so let's take some of the answers that I proposed, and let's apply them to find how we can resolve a lot of the issues that we have today. I mentioned a little while ago about how governments are a substitution of God in some people's minds, and therefore they create a government with awful, awful powers and controls and terrible things. Big government, people call it. Big government. Okay, even if it's democratic, even if it's a republic, it may not solve the problem if it's big government. So how do you do this? How do you free yourself to be able to come to realizations of the things I'm talking about without it being a belief just because Niles said it on the air? No, it doesn't matter what I say on the air. What matters is what's in your mind and heart, and that you can follow as a means of constructing a life with that makes some sense to you. The answer is the following: to test the things I'm saying in your life. If I'm saying that you're self-created, then test that out by trying it for a month or so. I am the creator of my life. Everything that is happening to me in my life comes from how I think, how I behave, how I respond, how I sense. All of those things come into play, and I'm the person who's doing it all. I'm not a puppet. I'm the puppet master, unless I choose not to be, and then I become not even a puppet. I become a physical outcome, which is never a good thing, believe me, in this world anyway. All right, so you just become the result of everybody else's creations. And that is just an outcome. And some people have lowered their life to that level of existence. If you've done that, you have my sympathy, and I wholeheartedly encourage you to change that attitude and expression. One of the things that you need to have in terms of like earning income and livelihood, it's an entrepreneurial nature. It doesn't mean you can't work for other people if that's your choice. But it's important to have an entrepreneurial nature in that you, within the kind of work you do, you become a co-creator or creator, besides just someone who is, I'm doing my job, I go to work and I do this and I come home, kind of thing. That is not a good place to be. It's why here in the U.S., entrepreneurial nature is dominant among people's thought processes, even though they may not be in business for themselves or anything like that. They still have the entrepreneurial nature. Now, what does that mean? It means that you, again, recognize that the nature of your doing a job, earning a living, is by your own creations. And if you think of it in that way, then you will take jobs which, if you're going to work for others, that allow you to be creative in a way so that both your income and your responsibilities are increased by your own creations. And you select that because you're an entrepreneur and you're refusing to just follow like sheep, others. See, if you're a sheep, then what happens is you become abused by the system, and then others are going to say, well, since you're my slave, you go work and do this, and no matter how good a job, you're not going to get paid anymore, and no matter what you think, I'm not going to listen to you, and on and on. That's going to be your existence, and it's going to be a miserable one. And all of the unions and all of the collective bargaining and all of joining together with others is not going to change this if you don't have an entrepreneurial nature. You see what I'm saying here? What I'm trying to explain is that what most people think of as outside forces controlling them is really them controlling themselves through their choices to not make choices. Their choices to have low connectedness of the choices they've made, so they have low consciousness. Their inability to sense properly, which causes them to make untold numbers of mistakes, which if you are an employee is going to get you fired, and if you're not an employee is going to cause your businesses or endeavors to fail. This is the nature of the problem, and it comes from the basic issue of recognizing that we're part of God, we're co-creators, and these are the ways that we can choose to live our life. You see how practical, I'm trying to bring this to a real practical level. You see how practical this really is. When people say, well, this guy just talks about highfalutin philosophy things, I never really think it's any, it comes to any good or anyway. But it does, because they're very, very practical outcomes. They're very important outcomes for each one of us, because the results of how you run these things in your life goes to the higher and bigger picture. People that have an entrepreneurial nature seek freedom, and they won't allow a government for very long to have the kind of controls that God might, but God chooses not to. They won't allow it. They'll vote him out. They'll impeach him. And if they're corrupt, they'll convict them. And if they're abusing their authority, they'll stop them in some way. You see, this is what makes us into becoming our souls. Because that's what our souls came here, to create a life, us, that would understand this while we're physically and astrally and lower mentally alive. The soul doesn't have any problem with us in its realm. It's in the higher mental world, and it already understands it. But we don't. We're lost in illusion. We're caught in our own contraptions, connivances, and we are not following the thought of God a lot of the time here on earth. We are the model that's being tested to see if we can overcome this in our adolescent minds to produce a result of real freedom, real love, true understanding, and responsibility with awareness that's accurate. That's what we're aiming for. That's what we're here to develop. And this idea, this single idea of being self-created is the answer to everything. And it was so of the founders of the United States. It has been so for most of the great philosophers over time. And it is true in a thing called Ageless Wisdom, which is really the spiritual foundations of our planet. And it's what I'm actually speaking from in terms of my own experiences. So what we're really dealing with here are questions that are so basic, yet so practical. And for those of you who think this show is not very practical, I don't know how you get any more practical than the issues we're talking about tonight. Because this gets down to the very core of who we are. It's based upon who God is and how God created us, how God created the universe. And not understanding that puts us in a tremendous disadvantage because we doubt who we are. And once you doubt who you are, other people will try to define who you are because of their desires to control and be in power. They're dark. Some of them are evil. And if you let them, they'll destroy you and this world. Let's talk about evil for a minute, because I think it's important to recognize that a major part of this experiment is to destroy evil. Evil is part of corruption. It's part of all of the things that I mentioned. But it is its own thing, in that it has a specific goal. And that goal is to defame and eventually destroy our ideation, our understanding, and our recognition of God. I know that sounds impossible. Like, why would it be so stupid? Because if it wants to destroy this, then it must believe it exists. That's the paradox of evil. Underneath the entire veneer, underneath all of the things that it expounds upon and that it promotes, that there is no God. Underneath it, it knows God exists, but it wants to destroy God because it wants to be in control. It wants to be God. And it can't be God if God exists. So it will destroy God so that it can be the big cheese. Again, in great illusion, because God only wants it to be free, even in its evil. And it wants to be free by destroying God. And part of God is, well, God's growth is life. And so it wants to destroy life, because then that will destroy God's growth, and that'll fix it. And then it can become more powerful than God. I know, this sounds like crazy, right? I didn't say that evil wasn't crazy. I just said that it wants to replace God. It's crazier than anything could be crazy. Because since it's part of life and it's trying to destroy life, guess what happens if it were successful? It would eventually destroy itself. Since evil feeds on other life, as it destroys life, it destroys its source of feeding and its source of power. It gets its power from taking energy from others. What happens when the others are gone? Then it'll take energy from its own members, and eventually those will all be gone. Evil is a zero sum, and ends up destroying itself. It is the antithesis of its creator, truly. But in being so, it is the destroyer of everyone and everything, including itself. Now, if you don't think that's stupid, I don't know what is. All right, so evil is trying to take over planet Earth. And it has taken over even a couple of galaxies, believe it or not. Whole galaxies. Not too many, just a couple, but that's bad. Galaxies are a big thing. Those galaxies are far, far away. They may not be in Star Wars, but they certainly exist, as far as I understand, on pretty much almost the other side of the universe. But their distance from us is irrelevant because they have an effect on us. Because their thought can move through the universe almost instantaneously. That sounds almost impossible. We think of the speed of light, you know. But thought can traverse the universe in fractions of a second. So their thought can greatly influence Earth, and it does. And I'm talking about the combined thought of a whole universe, I mean, a whole galaxy of evil dudes. But they're destroying themselves, so they have to go outside of their galaxy, since the whole galaxy went dark, to feed on the power, to get more power from others. Because within their galaxy, they've reached a homeostatic position. They can't grow anymore. So in order to stay alive, they go outside their galaxies. Tell me that isn't just obscene. It makes you sick to your stomach to even think about it. But this is evil. And evil affects individuals by their own thought. You cannot become evil if you don't think like evil. Once you start thinking like evil, it comes in and just takes charge. It says, good, I'm glad you joined us. But now that you've joined us, you've got to listen to what we say because we're your boss. Remember, there's no gods. You don't have any self-freedoms from God. We're your God, and we're going to tell you what to do. So you substitute God for evil dudes living in galaxies far, far away. That's a smart move. Well, that's going to give you all the control you can ever imagine, right? Yeah. No. All right, so how does this experiment then play out? Well, there's some rules, because God still has rules, even though it allows everything to be free. It's created the rules of physics. It's created some of the rules of how things move and interact within the physical world and within other parts of the universe that are not physical. So it has some kind of structure to it, we'll call it, particularly in the realms that human beings function in this structure. And the structure prevents certain things from happening. Not everything is possible, you see. And the interesting part of this is that as it applies to Earth, the rules that God has apply on Earth the same way they apply to every place else. So even though evil can get control over human minds and human behaviors in our adolescent moods and shifts and swings, evil cannot change the basic laws that God created the universe with. So it has to work within those laws, and it's a fascinating equation, so to speak. Let me describe this equation to you so you can get it down before the end of the show tonight anyway. And the equation goes something like this. Evil has the right to ignore all of God's thought, but it cannot overcome the physics of God's creations in mind. So ultimately, in order to overcome the inertia and forces it creates, tremendous forces, by going against God, it has to spend most of its existence. Now, I'm not just talking about, you know, like a little bit, like half hour a day. You know, most of its existence is centered around the survival of itself against these enormous forces that come from ignoring, so to speak, the laws of physics and the laws of God, and literally, it's kind of constant battle for survival. And you think this is a good way to live? Okay, you go for evil, yeah, go for it. And it is desperately having to bring in more and more power from stealing it from others who are not yet evil, and others that are less than as evil as it is in this position in the evil hierarchy of things. And so it's in this unbelievable state created by itself of incessant anxiety and fear of the forces of the universe coming in and destroying it every minute of its existence. This is what it creates for itself. This is the experiment of Earth for us to understand that and then use that against evil before evil wins against us here on this planet and destroys this world. I'm banging to death, excuse me, if you heard some noise in the background. So that's the key. That's our ticket. Turn evil upside down on itself. Turn corruption upside down on itself. Turn those in authority upside down on themselves, because they are desperately trying to hold on to the power they have and get more if they can, just to survive, much less grow. That's the secret. That's the dirty secret that evil doesn't want you to know about. When you fear it, when you ignore it, when it is harming you, when it is sneaking about like cockroaches in the night. That's the secret. How do we deal with it? The answer is pretty straightforward. You deal with it by exposing it. Because once it's exposed, once the light is shown on it, it loses its ability to steal the power fast enough to keep the forces that are around it from destroying it. It becomes destroyed by all the forces it has created itself. All of its evil deeds become exposed over time, and it can't get any more power. And it is destroying. It's destroyed by the very forces that it created by being against God in the first place. All the lies of the people who are evil are constructed by lies. They're constructed by having to continually keep those lies going, as an example. Keeping the lies going becomes their existence and their downfall. But eventually they run out of lies. Even the great evil ones in our history who use propaganda, which is a series of lies that keeps them ahead of the last lie, to try to keep evil alive mentally, it eventually fails because it's a Ponzi game of an unusual and incredible size. It's really a Ponzi game. Just incredible. Just amazing. Well, you know what? I'm out of time for right now. I hope this has given you some thoughts about God's creation versus a random universe. We ended kind of on a strange note, but I think that note brought together a lot of elements of what I was talking about. And sometimes you can know God through things that are ungodly. Hopefully that's helped tonight. Well, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.